The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, I'm stepping outside my comfort zone to discuss rap music, fat beats, MCs. It's gonna be the shits.
And you won't contain yourself when I reveal the horror that is the movie's skyline.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
And I'm Colin Kakamas.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Hello there, everyone. It is Thursday, September 1st, 2011, and we are back after a month of inactivity.
It'd be better just to say a hiatus.
Hiatus implies that it was intentional.
Well, wasn't it?
No, we're just not very good at keeping the schedule.
Well. Alright, well, a couple things we gotta do. We gotta throw out some love for the film group, Film Lovables. Yay. Go to our website, www.filmlovables.com. Also, we need to make mention of our partners in crime, so to speak, in the podcasting world. We have Sean Holmes and Ben Price over at BNS Reviews. That's bnsreviews@podomatic.com. And also, J.P. Schmidt, my director of photography for the feature that I'm working on. He also has a blog now.
Who?
And we'll toss up a link on that for the webpage, because honestly, I don't remember it right now.
Linky links.
Yes. But anyway, Justin, tell me about your music choices today.
Well, today, as I mentioned in the intro here, I'd like to discuss something that, frankly, I'm not as much an expert on. In fact, I am a total noob, to use the terminology. About rap music, about hip-hop. In fact, right off the bat, I'm not even sure what to call it, because I don't honestly know what the difference between rap and hip-hop is. I think there is a difference. Or maybe, you know, there isn't? I don't know. But I recently have taken something of a liking to it, although I must say my tastes are pretty all over the place, since...
Pretty vanilla.
I don't really say vanilla, because like most of my music tastes, a lot of it is kind of underground, or kind of alternative. Although not intentionally. Basically, what happened was, about I'd say a year ago, I decided that, you know, I need to give rap, or hip-hop, I think I'm just going to say rap, just keep
give
everything
it all,
consistent.
We'll just gloss it over, that's good.
To keep everything consistent, I'm going to say rap. And I decided that I should really learn to appreciate it. And so I had a friend, well, he's still my friend, and he's really, really into rap music.
Tim?
No, this is a gentleman by the name of Max.
Ah, Max.
Not Max Tanzer, who has been a guest on this program.
Oh, different Max.
But a different Max.
God, man, how many Maxes do you know?
Another fellow ginger.
Ah.
Well, not my fellow, because I'm not a ginger, but a fellow ginger to you.
Ah.
And he is super into rap. So one day I was driving around in his car, and he would play a lot of rap music. And I was like, you know, I think I actually like this stuff. I want you to give me all the rap music that you think I would like. Knowing my tastes, knowing that I'm, you know, into indie rock and progressive rock, and I like instrumental stuff, and I like jazz, and I like all this different stuff. I want you to give me all the rap music you have that I am going to dig. And so he did not disappoint. He took a flash drive of mine and just loaded it up with a whole bunch of stuff and gave it to me. And I'm so, you know, unknowledgeable about rap that just looking at it, I could not possibly tell you which of it was, you know, quote, mainstream and which of it was... underground or alternative stuff. It was just all the same to me. But, as I quickly realized, some of it, if I were to bring up in conversation with anyone, you know, most average people would probably know what it is. But then there's a lot of stuff he gave me that a lot of people would not have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to discuss equal parts both.
Okay.
When I do my top five. All right. But first, I want to get your opinion, Colin, on rap music before I discuss my appreciation for it.
Rap music, in my opinion, it's a bit of an acquired taste. There is some out there that I will listen to and enjoy the hell out of. And then there's some that I'm like, good God, this is like Diarrhea of the Mouth.
So, for example, good stuff to you. What are some artists you appreciate?
Let's see. Snoop.
Snoop.
Mm-hmm. Biggie.
Well, Biggie, of course.
Obviously.
Our podcast is already on the record as big supporters
Smalls.
Of Biggie.
Right. Tupac. And you know what? Anything. I'm going to go ahead and go on a record here. I'd say anything before 1997.
Okay. And you're definitely not the only person to share that opinion. I know my little brother, for example, likes a lot of old school hip hop. And even more old school than Biggie and Tupac, like Grandmaster Flash and
Sugar Hill Gang,
Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, oh yeah,
I like some of that stuff. I really like De La Soul because they don't rap about your typical, you know, rap subjects. They're actually like hippies, but they rap.
Right.
So
it's not the general terms of whores, guns, and whores getting shot with guns.
Right. Well, that brings us into probably the biggest point of contention that we need to discuss, which is whether you can classify an entire genre by what most of its artists, or even a few, choose to sing about. Because rap in our culture has been equated with not just a style of music, but a style of living, with a style of dress, with a style of acting, behavior. And is it fair to sort of lump all rap together like that?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's an interesting stance.
Okay, well, I mean, honestly, let's be fair here. Anytime you hear any story in the news when it's concerning rap, what is it about? Always.
It's either
someone
about a new feud.
Someone getting shot.
Or a beef.
Someone getting arrested. Or someone dying.
It's interesting because, on the other hand, the other thing you hear about a lot is collaboration. So rap artists are either at each other's throats or they're constantly collaborating, which I think is a really, really interesting dynamic. Because the one thing that sets rap albums apart from, you know, your average rock and roll album, for example, is that a rap album will have, like, a dozen different artists featured on it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have a whole lot of rock songs that have that little feature in parentheses.
No.
But that, I think, is pretty cool. I mean, because you're getting this, it's like a community effort. Even when the community is sometimes self-destructive, it's a completely different approach to making music. And this is getting into the stuff that I do like about rap music. Definitely the collaborative effort.
Mm-hmm.
The production values,
mm-hmm.
which I think is what also separates rap music apart. The really creative use of studio tricks, use of sampling, use of effects, all beneath the surface. Sort of, there's a lot under the hood
in
rap music.
I'll go ahead and give you that.
You know, and it varies, and different people have different styles. And so I wonder, you know, to you, which is more important, you know, the actual rap, the actual lyrics, or the beat, you know, the underneath stuff?
That's a good question. I'd have to equate that to who I'm listening to.
Okay.
Like, for instance, if I'm listening to Biggie or Tupac, I'm going to listen more to the lyrics. If I'm listening to anything more recently, probably going to listen more to the beat, mostly because it's a completely different socio-political structure. The difference, I mean, Biggie and Tupac, and they used to rap about, you know, shit that mattered, whereas nowadays the general substance of the rap is just excess.
Yeah.
And the pursuit of excess. But I will admit, I'm listening to older rap more because I enjoy the source material of what they're referring to, Whereas I listen to rap nowadays, I listen to it more for the music and for those very tricks that you just mentioned.
Yeah. So, when I was in high school and earlier,
okay,
I shared the opinion that probably a lot of our listeners will share, which is that, you know, rap is an inherently crappy genre, that there's nothing of value in there, that it is all just, oh, bitches and hoes and bling. And
well, that's because we were raised in the MTV generation and that's all they force feed us.
Right. And I realize now that, well, first of all, it's kind of an ignorant standpoint.
Yes.
In some ways, kind of a racist.
It's, well,
there's
no
element of race.
No. It's not racist only if you...
I'm not... Okay, let me rephrase it. I'm not saying that I was being racist. I'm not saying that I was being racist. What I'm saying is it so much of the politics of rap music and general opinion of rap music has to do with race. And whether you want to admit it or not, it is inherently tied up. You know, you can't separate racial issues from rap music. But people...
God knows they've tried.
Yeah. And people are not even aware of that when they talk about what they don't like about rap music. But there is a lot of intelligence in it, actually. So if we separate out what I consider the most mainstream, or what people like to refer to as gangsta rap, and again, gangsta itself, kind of a racialized term, right?
Yeah.
So we separate that stuff out.
Yes, because gangsta is the racially sensitive term. Gangster, like if it was gangster rap, it'd be because they're talking about, you know, illegal, anything that's illegal.
Yeah.
But it's gangsta.
And I'm not even saying that the subject material in those songs is without merit. It's just, it's a cultural viewpoint that you and I can't possibly
wrap our heads around.
So, for us to, like, pretend that we understand that stuff, it's we're fronting.
Yeah.
We're faking. So, the rest, if you look for it, there are intelligent lyrics, and that's what most strikes me about rap music, is the, like, sheer ability with words you have to be a rap artist.
You have to be very verbose.
Yes, very verbose. And as someone who, like, would like to think of myself as a writer, or at least an aspiring writer, that's actually something I'm very jealous of. Like, the ability to especially freestyle, but even to just to write a coherent rap that not only has to make sense, but also stick to a rhythm and a beat. I mean, that's a difficult skill. I mean, it's not something that that should be shirked at.
Not something that comes lightly.
Right, so for people who say that rap is not music, that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not playing instruments on the track, they're putting together samples and effects and loops in a way that totally is music. I mean, if you're gonna, the studio in itself is an instrument, and that goes back as far as the Beatles. In a lot of ways, rap music has the Beatles to thank for that, because they were one of the first bands to start fooling around with multi-track recording and actually using the studio not just as a medium, you know, as a way to put down the track, but actually to affect the song itself.
Yes.
So, let me get into my top five for this week.
Hey, top five songs about death. Allura's Dad tribute list.
So I totally realize, as I'm listening to some of the stuff that we've already recorded, that you can totally hear the couch in the background.
Yeah,
so
well,
those noises were the leather. It was not some other noise that you might be thinking of.
It's so good.
I mean, the leather couch is comfortable.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not going to lie. And I make no apologies for any sounds that you might hear in the background, because that's just me leaning back,
enjoying the feel of the leather. Deal with it.
Deal with it, indeed. All right, so I'm going to talk about my personal top five favorite rap artists.
Enthralling.
And it's not a... in this case, there's no real particular order.
Okay.
So I'm just going to mention them as they come to me, because I haven't actually gotten to the point of ranking them, because like I said, I don't feel I'm knowledgeable enough about rap at this point
to put them into a ranking system. Yeah,
to actually say one is better than the other.
Alright, so let's hear them.
So the first one I'm going to say is actually pretty well known. It's a pretty mainstream one, and in fact, this album is actually widely considered, apparently, to be one of, if not the greatest rap albums of all
time.
Okay,
so you're doing albums, not just groups.
Both.
Oh, okay.
In this case.
Okay.
If they have more than one album, I'll mention them, just the artist. But if it's just one album in particular, then I'll just say the album. So the first one I'm going to say is Illmatic by Nas, which is, as I just said, considered one of the, if not the greatest rap albums of all time.
Yeah.
And that was, I would say, mid-90s. Right, actually, when you were saying, sort of at the peak where you cut off, you know.
I wouldn't say cut off. It's just, you know, if I'm going to listen to rap music, I want to enjoy it. Considering most of today's rap music is just feeble callbacks to better years.
Yes.
It's just, I'm not saying that anything after 1997 is all shit. It's just, you know, I become far more picky about what is good and what is bad.
Yeah. Well, Illmatic came out, I believe, 1994.
Yeah.
And I think the 90s, like early to mid-90s, maybe a little bit of the late 90s, probably would be the best era for rap besides right now.
The Renaissance. Yeah, it's a renaissance for it.
Yeah, I think we're having a renaissance, at least in the alternative areas, which I'll get to. Because you go before 90s, you go into the 80s and earlier than that, you're getting into the really old school stuff, like I said, like Grandmaster Flash, like, you know, Tribe Called Quest, like things like that, which I like, but let's be honest, they're all pretty goofy. I mean, MC Hammer, all that sort of stuff, like that was that era. It's almost a completely different genre. It's
actually,
so
actually, MC Hammer was like early 90s, like really early 90s.
So yeah, so we'd say mid to late 90s then.
Yeah,
the best
era. I'll go 92 later.
Yeah. Like I like Grandmaster Flash. I like De La Soul. But it's pretty goofy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hardcore. It's not repping the streets in any way.
So, Illmatic by Nas.
Next, I'm going to say the album, well, particularly this album, but this one's kind of less mainstream, but Danny. He goes by the name Danny with an exclamation point.
Danny!
Yeah. And so his first two albums apparently kind of bombed, they kind of tanked, and he was considered a joke, and no one really liked him.
Considering his name had an exclamation point in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he came out with this third album, Charm, which blew people away. In fact, there were a lot of people who were reviewing this album who hadn't heard of him before, so they thought he just came out of nowhere, but he'd already had two albums where he sort of, you know, suffered defeat, learned from his mistakes. And Charm is a really cool album. It's a concept album, like a lot of these rap albums are. It's similar to, say, Lupe Fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
He has two concept albums, The Cool and Food and Liquor. And this one is actually similar to the story of The Cool. It's sort of, you know, an artist trying to get success, starting from the bottom, working his way up. It's a classic story,
mm-hmm.
realizing that fame ain't all it's cracked up to be. And so there's some cool songs on that track.
Yeah.
Or cool songs on that album. Lip Flappin' is one. I like Lip Flappin' because it's the sort of the concept of that song in the story is it's right when he's gotten like a record deal. So he's recording his big like major label debut, and it's basically just parodying all the bullshit that the major labels make artists do. Because he's rapping, and then in the middle of the song, he stops, and he's like, this makes no sense. Like, what I'm saying, like, these lyrics make no sense. I didn't write this. And he just stops, and he's like, you know what, I'm done with it. And then there's just, like, a guy who pops in, and he's like, no, man, this shit is tight. This shit is tight, yo, just keep going. And so he keeps going for, like, another minute or so, and he's like, no, I'm done with this, and just walks out. And there's, like 30 seconds of just silence. And he comes in with another song.
Nice.
bashing all the people who are, like, leeching off him now that he's famous.
Yeah.
Next, I'm going to say, since I already brought him up, Lupe Fiasco is another one of my favorites. I love the song Superstar, which is also off of, I think it's off of The Cool. He's also got an album, he raps about fame and stuff, but he also raps about skateboarding, because he's into skateboarding. Like, he's got a song called Kick Push.
He raps about what he knows.
Which is really good, yeah. I mean, he raps about...
They say right what you know, he knows what he does.
Yeah. And Lupe Fiasco, he almost never curses. You know, he doesn't use profanity much at all in his singing and in his rapping, which is cool.
See, I guess that was another thing that, you know, sort of adds to that detriment of, you know, rap music as a genre. Because, I mean, you have the rap artists that, you know, basically go off of, you know, their ability to come up with, you know, inventive raps.
Right.
And then you got the rap artists who swear for 90% of the tracks they do.
Right.
Eminem.
Well, I mean, look at the most recent MTV Video Music Awards. Like, Tyler, the Creator, his acceptance speech, you couldn't even understand what it was because almost the entire thing was bleeped out. I didn't watch it either. I just heard about this.
Oh, okay.
And then I watched the video on YouTube. Like, you can't understand what he's saying.
Did Kanye show up?
Kanye was there, but he was actually in a really good mood because Kanye and Jay-Z had this new collaboration.
Oh, do they?
That they're both working on.
Ah.
Because I actually really like Kanye a lot. Like, Runaway was a pretty cool...
Oh, you mean you like Kanye's music?
I like his music.
You gotta specify, though.
I think there's a very good chance that Kanye might be an idiot savant. Like, I think he might be, like, autistic or something. I think it's entirely possible that Kanye is developmentally disabled.
That would explain everything.
It would explain his behavior. It would explain why he's so good at making music, but so bad at everything else. And also, look at his Twitter page. Like, if you can read his Twitter page and not crack the fuck up, I don't know how you are human. Look right now. Just go to your... If you're not on your... Well, you're obviously on your computer, because you're listening to this. Actually, you might have downloaded it. But if you're not, go on your computer and look up... Josh Groban sings the best of Kanye West Twitter page. It's awesome. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty
Josh Groban sings the best of Kanye West. Actually, funnily enough, another thing I saw, which was a lot funnier, I don't know if it was you that showed me this or if it was Sean, but Ben Folds. He did this concert where he put, like, a bunch of cameras around his piano, and then he just, he loaded up a session at Chat Roulette.
I think I showed that to you.
You probably did, because that's fucking hilarious.
That's pretty funny, too. Although, not relevant to this discussion, but also definitely worth watching.
That's penis.
Yeah, I actually like Kanye West's music. I think I don't think he's a great rapper. Jay-Z's a much better rapper, but Kanye West is a great producer, and he actually is a good musician and good musical ideas. And, like, there's a sample in Runaway that he took from an old Mike Oldfield record, who probably none of you out there even know who that is. Mike Oldfield was, like, progressive rock producer and musician.
Like, how prog rock are we talking? Are we talking King Crimson?
Okay, we're talking Mike Oldfield would write 40, 50-minute songs, like album-long songs. Like, one song is the entire album.
Oh, yeah.
No stop.
Right.
And he would play every single instrument himself.
Yeah.
Like, Tubular Bells is his most famous work. You might know Tubular Bells because if you've ever seen the movie The Exorcist, the theme music to The Exorcist is a snippet from Tubular Bells. Tubular Bells has something like 100, 120 different instruments in it, and Mike Oldfield plays every single one. And he just used, like 1,000... tracks, we're going to talk about multi-track recording. He recorded every instrument himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, like, out there and avant-garde Mike Oldfield is. And so Kanye, like, sampled Mike Oldfield on Runaway, which is pretty awesome. And also, if you've, like, the Runaway video, it's really goofy, it's really stupid. He's, like, fucking an angel or a phoenix or something. There's, like, a scene with weird ballerinas at a dinner. It's crazy. But point is, Kanye and Jay-Z have this new album that they're collaborating on, which I think is actually really cool, because they both have admitted to themselves that they're not they're not like in the streets anymore. They're not like part of that scene. They're not part of that culture anymore. Like, they admit they're not going to try and pretend that they're still gangster, they're still hardcore. Like, the things that Kanye and Jay-Z rap about now are having so much money that they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Like, they're still rapping about being alienated, but instead of alienated because they're poor and living on the streets, they're alienated because they're richer than everyone else alive.
That sounds about right.
Which, I think, like, that's admirable. Like, they're rapping what they know, and what they know is being super filthy, disgustingly rich. But anyway, so moving on. Number four is a white rapper, the first white rapper on this group. LP, E-L.
Actually, this is number three, isn't it?
No, the first one I said was Nas, Illmatic. The second was Danny. And number three was Lupe Fiasco.
My fault.
That whole thing about Kanye and Jay-Z was kind of a tangent. Number four, LP. LP is a lot different from these other mainstream. This is where we're getting to really underground, these last two. LP, like I said, he's a white guy.
Yeah.
But he's also considered one of the most technically proficient MCs. Okay. Like, just the speed with which he is able to rap, mm-hmm. and just his crazy use of words. His music's a lot different, though. It's a lot darker. It's a lot more kind of, oppressive. Like, it kind of, you can't listen to the whole thing, I don't think, in one sitting, because it'll start making you feel paranoid. Like, especially don't listen to it if you're high, because you'll probably freak out. Because it's just kind of weird, really dark sound effects and stuff. But it's good. It's really cool. Okay. Look up the song Tasmanian Pain Coaster, which is a really weird name for a song. But
Wait. The name of the song is Tasmanian Pain Coaster?
Yes.
Okay.
Tasmanian, Tasmanian
Devil. No. Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Coaster.
Just wanted to make sure I was hearing you right. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And then finally, my number five, or number one, depending on which order we're going in, and this is the one that I'm actually going to share a song with you for this episode, is Aesop Rock.
Aesop, now, these guys I have heard of.
You have heard of Aesop
Rock?
Yes,
I have.
Great. Okay, so I don't know how, that's what I'm saying, I don't know how underground or how relatively well-known these artists are.
Well, I heard about it from you, so it'd have to be still pretty underground.
Oh, well, then I probably mentioned it before.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you heard about it from someone else, then I don't know. I'm pretty sure Aesop Rock's probably pretty underground, at least compared to Nas or Lupe Fiasco or Kanye or Jay-Z.
Yeah. I would say compared to them, yes, he would be considered underground.
Yeah. Aesop Rock not only is a white guy, he's actually Jewish. And he's from Long Island, New York.
All right,
Jewish. Could not get any more stereotypically Jewish.
All right.
Although he's not, I don't think he identifies as being Jewish, but I guess if we're to say ethnically or culturally, he's Jewish.
So he doesn't wear the sweatsuit?
No. He's not Modest Yahoo. He's not his music isn't about being Jewish.
Oh.
I just think it's worth noting that he is Jewish, because he's also ridiculously good at rapping.
And that's cool.
His stuff is... Everything is exactly what I like about rap music, the stuff that I like, because he's incredibly literate, he's incredibly verbose, and he also can just rap at super fast speeds.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually criticized him for his lyrics being too intelligent, being so intelligent they don't know what he's rapping about. There's actually a quote from him that I want to share. In response to these criticisms.
These allegations
that his shit is just random and made up. Because I can tell you lyrics that are, pretty much random. Look at a lot of Yes songs, especially Close to the Edge. John Anderson, the lead singer of Yes, actually admitted that he just put the words together so that they would sound good with the music. He didn't... Although I love those lyrics, too, because they're really out there and really crazy. Mm. But, Ian Michael Babbitts, otherwise known as Aesop Rock, when questioned about his lyrical style in an interview, responded, "It's probably because it's not the most accessible music in the world. It may pose a slight challenge to the listener beyond your average pop song. I'm no genius by a long shot, but these songs are not nonsensical. That's pretty preposterous. I'd have to be a genius to pull this many nonsensical records over people's eyes. It's not exactly fast food, but when people pretend I'm just spewing non sequiturs and gibberish, I can't help but think they simply haven't listened and are regurgitating some rumor they've heard about me. Even if it's not laid out in perfect sentences, is any rap? You have to be an idiot to not at least grasp a few things from these songs, or have had no interest in pulling anything from them in the first place. So I want to ask you a question. Which do you think would actually... Which is actually more pretentious, I guess? Would it be more pretentious if he actually did just randomly put words together and hope they worked? Or is his response more pretentious by saying... Like, is it more pretentious to say my shit's just random? Or is it more pretentious to say it has a point, you just don't get it?
Well, considering that quote was in direct response to, you know, speculation that he was just making shit up, I think that's more just him defending himself. So I guess it would be a little bit more pretentious that if he was just making shit up.
Yeah, which is what he said. He's like, I would have to be... I'd have to be some kind of genius or insane person to put this many... make this many songs that were just random words. And I would say even if it is random, if it works, it works. Like, that's pretty much rule number one about any art. If it works, it works. So... It's good shit. Like, it's in terms of the sampling and the beats, the production value, I'd say it's actually pretty sparse. There's not a whole lot going on with it. Although one of the songs on the album that I'm discussing in particular, which I haven't even mentioned, but it's called Music for Earthworms, and in fact, it's his very first debut. Apparently, incredibly rare and hard to find because it was only released on CDR. So it's kind of ironic.
Only released on CDR.
Yeah.
I.e.,
like a demo.
Ah.
So it's actually kind of ironic that I have this album, because I don't know anything about it. It just happened that Max had it. I'm sure he actually had to, like, go to some great lengths to get it, but I just, like, it was on a flash drive that he gave me. And so I have this album that's, like, really rare and lots of people can't find. Not that I have a physical copy, but...
Well, technically, you probably just could burn it to a CD, yeah, CDR.
I just give
and
it
no
to
one
someone,
would ever know
and
the
they
difference.
Would not know the wiser. And then try and, you know, sell it to them for some, like, ridiculous price. But it's funny because he even, like, in another album that he did, on one of the songs, he actually references the fact that the album, that Music for Earthworms is so rare. But yeah, it's pretty cool. In fact, some of the songs on the album are just promos he recorded at radio stations while he was being interviewed.
Nice.
So, the song I'd like to share with you, and I'm wrapping up my segment of the show today. I realize it was not as humorous or as informative as other segments.
I don't know. I find myself entertained.
Well, that's good. Hopefully other people will say the same thing.
Hopefully.
But I just wanted to share something that, you know, I'm trying to get into, and I'm admitting I don't know that much about it, but I think it's good that we expand our horizons and listen to new stuff, unless it's country music.
Yeah.
So with that being said, here is the song Shere Khan by Aesop Rock off his CDR debut, Music for Earthworms.
glitches, grimly distributed by side effects, consumed, cocooned in antisocial trenches, drenched, cradled between dense pillars of polar value, lies a gray soul blueless and sky eye feeding for the sky.
Synthesized lies, rise synthetic.
Sitting inside solidified plastics whose lateral burns germ compatible. My firm's radically piloted, dodging a fire swiftly. Yellow brick stalker walking shifty. Ah, but a prototype, Metroid programmed to hold a course style while y'all soaking in the stages of denial. Your petty soldiers stand fragile like Giacometti sculptures embedded in aromatic cultures. We rock steady vultures plus eyes, the geyser throwing the soul. My wingspan stands flags in the snow with a pole's berserk. Swerve my alignment towards solitary confinement and jaded. Stripping, color my passion mitigated. I'm slipping.
It seemed like a small gray cat to me sleeping underneath the silvery moon. Paws curled beneath your head till the sun came down.
Destructive flux is in societal withdrawal collide slide fueled by the fury spun a ring around my honor, but the opulence took shelter in my holler. Melancholy masquerade cast amongst the braiding of belligerence and blazing terror that blew the lockdown off my placement. I'll stay special agent till the sky falls, reverse the curse till my fellow lost children disperse.
And we're back. That was the song Shere Khan by Aesop Rock off his CDR debut. Music for Earthworms you may have also heard featuring the lovely Anne Colville. And now I'm going to kick things over to Colin because I have talked enough. And there's the leather sound again. But anyways, take it away.
Alright, so instead of this week doing a top 10 and doing a review of a more current film, I'm actually going to go ahead and vent on a movie that I actually saw on Netflix a few weeks back. This movie, I'm going to go ahead and be honest, is probably the second worst film I've ever seen.
Wow. Where does it rank compared to, let's say, Transformers 3?
Well, Transformers 3 is the worst film I've ever seen.
Alright, so immediately behind that.
Yeah, we're talking like a very close second.
I almost feel like we could devote an entire like segment every week just to discussing shit we've seen on Netflix.
Yeah, I think we could, and I think we should.
Alright, we're going to have to make a sound effect for that in the future, but I think we should create a new segment called I Can't Believe That Got Made, and I Can't Believe It's on Netflix.
Yep. Well, this movie, not only is it on Netflix, but this movie actually got, like, I mean, we're talking, like, huge production values. It's not like a crappy sci-fi channel movie.
So it's not a B-movie.
No, we're talking, like, millions of dollars. You know, it was, you know, trailers all over the place. It had two C-list actors. I was going to brag about the acting, but then I was like, wait, there were only, like, two actors that I knew of.
Well, you said C-list, so you have not set the bar very high.
No.
I mean, it sounds familiar.
I think they wasted all their money on the CGI, which would explain a lot.
The name sounds familiar, but I honestly cannot for the life of me recall anything about it. I don't remember seeing a trailer for it.
Yeah.
I just remember hearing about a movie called
Skyline.
I couldn't remember if you said the name
The trailer you might remember is you see blue lights hitting all over the place, and then it's interspliced with clips of Dan Rather.
Dan Rather, okay. So far,
Dan Rather
still
was like,
not ringing any bells.
It's like Dan Rather's like, you know, it's like we equate the landing of alien life to that of Columbus in the New World. Just so you know, it didn't end too well for the Indians. I'm like,
okay.
Dan Rather, are you attempting to be funny?
Starting to bring back memories.
Yeah.
Starting to bring back
memories. To be perfectly honest, it really doesn't matter because I'm not gonna lie to you. This movie was bad.
So this is an alien invasion flick.
Yeah. And it actually is an alien invasion flick, and I'm gonna go ahead and just give you a big wide disclaimer right now. I'm going to reveal spoilers of this film, okay? Just because basically I'm going to try to prevent you from ever watching this film.
Well, as we said in our Transformers 3 review, you can't spoil something that's already rotten.
Yeah, pretty much.
So can we just have a brief plot summary here? Because I know nothing about this movie, and I'm sure many other people don't either.
All right, well, basically, it starts off with one guy getting abducted, and then this girl basically seeing him. Basically, all you see is this bright blue light, and then this dude's eyes start to smoke as he just walks the light, and then he's taken.
And when we say eyes start to smoke, smoke is literally pouring out of his eye sockets.
Oh, I'm sorry. The way it's looking, did you ever see Cowboys vs. Aliens?
Yes, we reviewed it, didn't we, on this?
No, we reviewed it on BNS.
That's right, that was on...
Well, remember how their eyes went in that movie?
Yeah.
Like, they looked into the light and their eyes went, like, sort of gray?
Yeah.
Something similar to that, except their eyes went, like, bright blue, and their, like, veins started showing and everything started going, like, weird. Like, their head was about to explode.
Did it? Because that would have been pretty awesome.
No. So one guy disappeared, and the chick next to him, who hasn't seen the light yet, starts freaking out, right? So then another guy comes out and sees the light, and that's when it cuts to 2 days before, right? That it leaves you off with this other dude being drawn towards the light, and then it cuts to the beginning of the story. Okay. So they're trying to be Tarantino-esque, and they fail pretty badly. So, long story short...
Tarantino-esque in terms of the chronology,
yes.
Not in terms of, like, shots going around a table with people talking about pop culture.
No. We're talking about chronology jumping all over the place.
Okay.
The next bit that annoys me is... there. Like I said, we're talking, like, probably the worst casting I've ever seen.
Who was the headliner? Like, who was the main bill? Who was the draw for this film?
Turk from Scrubs and Angel from Dexter. I wish I could be kidding.
The fact that the most well-known actors in this movie are actors that we don't know the actual names of.
No, it's Donald Faison, and I don't know Angel's name from Dexter.
Yeah, I think I knew Donald Faison, but I've never seen Dexter. And
yeah, so. It, for those of you out there who actually watch
If you'd said Turk and JD...
Yes, but see, here's the thing.
That would have been pretty awesome.
Trust me, if it had been Turk and JD, this movie would have been 8 times more enjoyable. I mean... Well, see, here's the thing. The main character, he's Donald Faison's best friend. And he's nerdy. And he's a white guy. So logic would dictate, hey, get Zach Braff.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer right there.
But I guess he was off doing some low-budget independent film.
Because then, instead of it being a story of, how do these characters that we don't give a shit about handle an alien invasion, it's, how do Turk and JD handle an alien invasion?
One could only hope, because I'd watch that movie.
And where is Dr. Cox?
Oh, God. Well, long story short, it starts off on a bad note, because the main character is like a bad hair day away from being cave-in. I'm not kidding. This dude's got this curly nightmare of hair, and he's got a pencil stash. And I'm going to tell you something.
Also rocking a wife beater.
Oh, yes, he was, actually.
Wow.
But I'm not going to lie to you. Look at any hero in the history of film. None of them have ever rocked a pencil stash. Ever.
Oh, man, are we really going to... All right, let's...
Think about it. Like, actually think about it. Name one hero... in a film that rocked a pencil stash.
I mean, I'm trying to think of how many characters just in general
had a pencil stash.
I mean, besides John Waters, it's not... Like, the only person who is known for rocking a pencil stash is John Waters. And he's not exactly what we'd call heroic.
Nope.
Alright. I accept your claim. I don't think I can think of a single... movie hero.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, dude. I mean, seriously, the most memorable line of that entire movie was in the first 5 minutes. And that's literally Donald Faison at his most Turk. I'm not kidding. Like, they get to, like, apparently the main character, we're gonna call him Pencil Stash from now on.
Sounds good.
Pencil Stash
or P-Stash.
Yeah, P-Stash. There you go. So P-Stash and his fiance fly out to California and meet up with Donald Faison and his wife, and they're hanging out.
Wait. Are you trying to suggest to me that a guy with a pencil mustache actually can score a chick? That, to me, seems more implausible than the alien invasion scenario.
K-Fed did it.
That this guy with a pencil stash... Well, a human female.
Yeah, no, it was human female.
Okay, but K-Fed... I wouldn't call...
Okay, maybe K-Fed we wouldn't call necessarily human.
I mean, I don't know if I'd call... I don't know if I'd call Brittany human at this point either. She's,
okay,
she's more machine than man now.
Okay. Alright, so... Oh, God. So, they fly out and... So, they fly out to California, they get there, they're hanging out with Turk and... I'm just going to call her Mrs. Turk because I don't remember the character's name.
So we got Turk, Mrs. Turk, P-Stash, and Mrs. P-Stash.
Pretty much. So
I hope you folks at home are following this because I sure am.
So, okay, and the best line of this entire movie, I'm not even kidding. They're all in front of, they're all in his apartment, which is pretty nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then basically Donald Faison walks over, tilts his head like Turk, he's like, "You wanna go to the pool?" I'm like, we got a good laugh out of that for about 5-10 minutes. We actually had to go back and listen to that over again because That honestly sounded like something from Scrubs. We're like, really? Really, dude?
Question, did they have a stuffed dog in their apartment?
No.
Alright.
I wish...
I don't know why I'm still insisting on trying to turn this into an episode of Scrubs.
Because it would have been far more enjoyable if we'd done it that way.
Alright.
Okay, so... So they have this party, and Miss P-Stash shocks Mr. P-Stash by informing him they're having a P-Stash kid. And just seriously, just the idea of a toddler with a P-Stash, that's just cracked me up.
Well, I mean, look at the music video for The Creep.
Yeah, that would do it. Oh, God.
Okay. I feel like maybe we should end this episode with that song.
I agree. I think we could. All right, so then the film seriously just goes ass backwards. It's basically, they have a party. Mrs. P-Stash tells them they're having a kid together. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to handle this. And then, like, 30 seconds later, the personal secretary for Turk walks out of the bathroom. And then Turk walks right behind her, zipping his pants up. Wow. Classy, dude.
Real classy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it gets better.
Oh. Joy.
So, alright, so then cut to the alien invasion, which just comes out of nowhere. And then we get right back to where we started. One dude disappears, personal assistant starts freaking out, P-Stash walks out, and he gets an eyeful of the alien radiation beam or whatever the fuck we're gonna, whatever it is.
Okay, in the trailer, was there a shot, sort of like a behind-the-back shot, sort of angled up of the two of them, like, sort of like looking up at the sky as this beam comes down?
Maybe.
And or like things are exploding or something around them, and they're sort of like the two of them are in sort of in the center focus, but then like the camera's looking
That might
past.
Have been.
I remember that trailer now. I remember that trailer, but now because I remember thinking when I saw the trailer, because the alien invasion part comes out of nowhere in the trailer, and I was like, wait, is this a buddy cop movie that happens to take place during an alien invasion? Like, because the trailer made it seem like it was more about the two of them and not about the actual alien invasion. I was like, that's actually a neat idea for a movie. It's like, it's a buddy cop movie where the backdrop just happens to be while aliens are invading. And
yeah.
I was like, that would actually be clever. I'm guessing it's not the case.
No. 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 What happens is, so anyway, shit goes bad fast. So then, Mrs. Turk, well, actually, no. Firstly, Mrs. Turk finds camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there are pictures on there of Turk diddling the personal secretary.
Okay.
I was like, why wouldn't
Great.
You
Good
wipe
choice.
The memory card, you
yeah.
putz?
Why
don't
you take pictures of it?
Maybe because he needs to get, I don't know. Maybe she's not giving him it.
Now he gets his jollies.
I guess so. So then they decide to go out to see if they can escape to the water because Turk's got a yacht. So
okay,
they're like,
great.
Hey, they're not oversitting water. We can get away.
Man, I mean, Turk has a wife. He's
Turk's
got a
loaded
mistress,
in this movie.
He's got a yacht. What the hell is P-Stash bringing to the table?
P-Stash apparently is the power behind the throne, so to speak.
Really?
Apparently, if Turk didn't have P-Stash, Turk would not be in California, but living at large.
Well, I guess behind every great man, there's a great piece of white trash.
Sounds about right. So, then they leave the building, and... Oh, yes. Anybody who was thinking that Turk was going to make it, yeah, you're wrong. Turk dies in, like, the first 10 minutes.
Wait, we're only 10 minutes into the movie here?
Yeah.
We've been talking about this thing for, like...
We've been talking about
minutes.
It longer than it's actually taken me to get through this film.
That's kind of amazing. That's kind of a first. All right, well, let's... So all the good... I mean, Turk's out of the picture.
Yeah, Turk's out of the picture. Everything good in this film is over.
So we might as well just sort of expedite the rest
yeah,
of this.
So long story short is Angel from Dexter shows up. He's like a hotel... He's like a hotel guard or whatever. He shows up and he's like, we need to stay in the apartment. And so apparently if you get alien light shining in your face, you apparently gain some of their power.
Okay.
Go figure. So, since he got a full blast of it, P-Stash is basically starting to get, like, black plague in his stomach or something.
Oh, no.
And then, not only that, he's also getting, like, super strength and shit.
Oh, super P-Stash.
So, like, for instance, P-Stash wants to leave the building towards the end of the film, and Angel tries to stop him, and he's just like, he just picks him up and, like, holds him 10 feet in the air. He's like, I'm not leaving without my family. It's like, we're taking cues from the Harrison Ford School of Acting here?
Get off my plane.
Pretty much. And it is bad. And basically, after that point, after they leave the apartment, people just start dropping like flies. Mrs. Turk gets sucked out of the window. Like, a Balrog-esque creature comes in and smashes up the apartment and tries to get Angel. And then a gas line gets knocked loose, so he just lights... he tries to light a lighter, but loses it, so he has to go scrambling around for it as he's pulling him away. And honestly, probably the most forced line in this entire film was, Vaya con Dios, you bastard. I'm like, really? God damn it.
That writer needs a kick in the nuts.
I think the whole cast, crew, directors, they all need a kick in the nuts.
Just one collective kick in the nuts.
Pretty much.
Alright, so how far are we into the movie?
Okay, well, I'm just skipping right to the end.
Yeah,
okay,
just tell me how it ends.
Okay, so the alien invasion actually succeeds.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's not even fair. The main characters, the P-Stash and Mrs. P-Stash, they get sucked up into the alien spaceship, right? And that's the end of day two, right? So we're like, okay, they got sucked up into the spaceship. Game over, right? And then it goes to day three. I'm like, day three? Why the fuck do we need a day three? Everyone's dead. No. Because now we're up in the alien spaceship, right? So, Mrs. P-Stash wakes up as they're taking P-Stash away. Well, apparently...
they being the aliens.
Yeah, they being the aliens. Apparently, this whole alien race... they need human brains to power their little golem creatures.
I feel like they could have chose better.
Probably.
There are better brains out there.
Well, they kind of take what they can get. So basically...
They could have abducted a Wendy's, an entire Wendy's restaurant, and gotten more brain power.
Probably. Well, so basically, they take P-Stash, they pulp him, and take his brain.
So he dies.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
Well, kind of. So they put P-Stash's brain in a golem creature, right? And so then they take her, right? And she's pregnant at the time, so they're like, oh, she's got a baby. We're going to harvest it. Right?
Yeah, this is bleak.
Yeah, it gets weird at this point. So they're taking her, and she starts freaking out, right? And then the golem creature, like, it, like, all their eyes are, like, blue. Its eyes turn red. Apparently, P-Stash is...
attack mode.
Well, actually, apparently, P-Stash has gained control of the golem creature.
I see.
So, he basically just... yeah, of course. So he runs over and just wrecks the shit out of the thing that's got her. And then he does this little hand motion that, you know, P-Stash did when he was a human... and she realizes, oh, he's in a new body. As in,
see, this just feels... now this just feels like a blatant rip-off of District 9.
Well, and here's the thing. That's the end of the movie.
And that's it. That's such a rip-off of District 9.
No. It's not even... it's not... no, like, she's still in the alien spaceship. He's still an alien. So they're together. And she knows he's an alien.
I mean, she's not gonna...
no, she's not. But here's the thing.
A golem creature, but...
but here's the thing that annoys me, right? It just ends right there. You don't know what happens. Do they live? Do they die? Does he get killed? Does he sacrifice himself to save her? No one knows.
They're probably screwed. I mean, I don't think he's going to, like, take on the entire alien horde, but, you know...
you never know. It did switch it up a little bit, where, like, right at the end, like, it went to, like, the credits and, like, directed by these assholes. And then it cuts straight to like a still shot of him fucking up another alien with her in his hand. I'm like, really? We're going for still shots now. That's what
I guess I'm a little confused by your description of him as a golem creature, because golem is really small, but while you say he's
a golem
up in one hand.
A golem.
Oh, golem, not golem, like
sorry,
precious.
Golem. No, not precious. Like huge motherfucker.
Oh, like a golem. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
This is a big ass.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, it's a big fucker.
It's a big one.
Oh, bigger.
It's a big one, boys and girls.
No, but seriously, that movie is by far probably it's basically the biggest problem with it is it's taking ideas from better science fiction films and boiling them down to like their most basic levels, turning it into a gray homogenous mess,
like a pulp.
Yeah,
like what they did to Peacetide.
Pretty much what they did to Peacetide.
I guess I'm just having not seen the movie. I guess I'm just confused. What makes this movie so horrible? I mean, from what you described, yeah, it sounds dumb. It sounds like bad writing, maybe some bad acting, but I mean,
you know what?
What like
if
what
you
combination
if
of
you
these
don't,
elements?
If you don't believe me, if you can't just get off of my description what makes that movie horrible, then I'd make a suggestion: watch that movie.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, that ends my review, and thus that ends the show.
All right. Well, before we get out of here and wrap things up, let's just plug a few more things. Of course, our next episode will be
SP Explosion.
Yeah, and boy, is it going to be awesome! We have at least three confirmed interviews at this point. We can confirm these, so I can actually tell you what they are now, so you can get excited.
Yes.
First, we've got Becky and Frank, the creators of a webcomic called Tiny Kitten Teeth.
Yes.
So go check that out.
Yes.
TinyKittenTeeth.com. Next, we've got
Darren Gendron,
the creator of Hello with Cheese.
Local guy from Columbia, Maryland.
Yeah, actually a local guy, so I'm really excited to talk to him.
Yeah.
And then, this one actually, in the webcomics world, is pretty well known. John Rosenberg, the creator of two very, very successful webcomics, Goats and
Scenes from Multiverse. Yeah.
And he has actually confirmed that he is going to interview us. So I also
we're
going to
interview him.
We're going to interview him. Yes. I also just found out today, just because I reread his webcomics too, Jeff Rowland, who makes the webcomics Overcompensating, Wigu, he's also the guy who runs Topatico.
Really?
Like the Topatico web comic empire.
Hmm.
He is the one who created that, and he's in charge of it. Like, he runs that shit. He's actually going to be at SBX, too. He wasn't on the list there, but he said on his webpage he's going to be at SBX. So we're going to send him a Twitter, too. Maybe he'll try and interview.
Maybe he'll deem us worthy of a few minutes of his time.
Yeah. We also have, which would be awesome, because from what I've heard, he's a very, like, kind of out there guy. He's kind of crazy, but he's very important in the world of webcomics.
Oh,
yes. He's a big name, so.
I mean, there are at least 10 or 13 of the webcomics that most 20-somethings read are Topatico, involved with Topatico, so.
Yeah.
It would make sense.
And then I think we have a maybe, probably not going to have, but a maybe from Chris Hastings, who makes Dr. McNinja, my personal favorite webcomic.
Fingers crossed,
but we can't guarantee that one.
Yes.
But those three, at least, I'm very excited to talk to, and SP Explosion is going to be...
It's going to be pretty badass.
It's going to be pretty badass. And then, finally, I'd just like to plug another podcast, just a little comedy podcast you all should check out. It's called the Stack of Dimes podcast.
Yes.
It's just sort of two guys in Seattle. It's sort of like what our old format was. They don't really have set segments. They just sit around and talk. But they're just hilarious. I mean, they're just really, really funny guys. I mean, it's a lot of like crude bathroom humor and just like they do movie reviews. Most of what they talk about is movies and fast food.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Now that you're plugging one, I'd like to plug one.
By all means.
I'd like to plug Tom and Mike, or Mike and Tom, or Tom and Mike, I don't know which
one. I think
it's
Mike and Tom.
Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. It's Michael Ian Black and Tom Cavanaugh. You might know Tom Cavanaugh as JD's brother from Scrubs.
And you might know Michael Ian Black
from Stella.
All sorts of things on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Reality Bites Back. He's just awesome.
And yes.
It is literally what it
basically
kind of
they eat a snack and they basically just talk about it for like an hour.
Yeah, and those are only like, you know, 20, 30 minutes long at the most. So those you can are easily consumable, like a snack.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that was fun. It was a fun episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's wrap things up here. Until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
And I'm Colin Kaepernick.
And we are boldly going nowhere. Outro. Boldly Going Nowhere is a Los Tres Monos production.
Boldly Going Nowhere does not condone or allow the growing or wearing of a pencil mustache.
And don't forget to smile.